this is Dr. Amy Myers. Welcome back to another episode of the Myers Way podcast. I'm very excited about our guest today. She's a very special friend, Dr. Susan Blum. She is the founder and director of the Blum Center for Health, which is located in Rye Brook, New York, just outside of New York. She's also a clinical professor of preventative medicine at Mount Sinai Medical School, and she is on the advisory board to Dr. Oz. She recently wrote a book, which is an awesome book, and we're going to talk about that today, The Immune System Recovery Plan. Welcome, Dr. Blum. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm terrific this morning. How are you doing?
Great. I'm just really excited to have you on the show. This is a hot topic for so many people. I know, you know, our stories are somewhat similar. You had autoimmune, I had autoimmune. We both see a lot of people in our clinics with autoimmune, so it's a really hot topic, and I know my listeners are going to enjoy hearing your perspective about all this.
Excellent. I'm happy to share it, because as you know, autoimmune diseases are now the number two chronic disease in our country.
I know. It's quite...
We really need to do something about it.
Absolutely. Well, how I like to start off is really hearing kind of a your story and a little bit about you, because most of us that have gone into functional medicine have a personal story, and I think that's what makes us really, you know, great at what we do. And I know you're a fabulous functional medicine physician. So do you mind sharing your story with us?
Not at all. You want me to start with my story, how I got to functional medicine, or my autoimmune story?
You know, however you want to start. My guess is that they're kind of interconnected.
But actually, as a matter of fact, they really are. Let's see. Well, you know, I was practicing conventional medicine. I started out in the world of internal medicine, and I was very interested in primary prevention. I was very interested in nutrition and stress, and I was finding not much help in the conventional medical world to guide me in that direction, to how to work with my patients that way. And so about 13 years ago, I developed Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is an autoimmune disease, and it's actually the most common one that walks into my office. I don't know about you, Amy, whether or not that's, or Dr. Myers, however you want me to refer to
you. Oh, please, Amy, yeah.
Yeah, Amy. So I developed Hashimoto's, and I became very interested in trying to figure out what caused it. And it set me on a real investigation of all the integrative medicine, all the alternative medicine things out there. So I went to naturopaths and acupuncture and whole blood microscopy under the microscope and homeopathy. And I did a lot of these things. And then I went to the Institute for Functional Medicine and did my training in functional medicine. And that completely changed my life. I felt like I had woken up from a dream, you know, and found really what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And I followed all these functional medicine tools that I'm going to share with you today and that I share in the book, sort of the step-by-step process for finding the causes and triggers of autoimmune disease and curing those causes. And then you heal the autoimmune disease. And that's what I did for myself. So it's a very exciting story. And so it really changed my whole perspective on how I wanted to practice medicine, because all these people with complex chronic disease that you see every day and that I see every day and that go to their conventional doctors and get no hope and they're told they have to live this way the rest of their lives, there is actually something that you can do about it. And so physicians like you and I that have found functional medicine both for ourselves and now for our patients, we know that we can help everyone, you know? And so once they find us, they're happy and they don't leave.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, isn't it? It's so amazing. I remember my father is actually suffering from a chronic disease. Fortunately, he is trying to do some of the functional medicine approach. But I remember that his physician coming up to him and saying something, and he uses the word, you know, well, this is what we're doing to manage your disease. And it just stopped everybody mid-sentence. I said, did everybody hear that? He is not trying to solve your disease, Dad. He's trying to manage it. And that's, I'm sure, how you felt in conventional medicine. It's just a management of these diseases. But now in functional medicine, we actually have real solutions, you know, as you and I have experienced personally, as well as that we see every day in our clinics. And exactly. It's so, so satisfying.
It's so satisfying. And, you know, we offer hope. We're offering hope to people who come in to my every day. I see people just in despair, depressed, tired, in pain, you know, thinking that they're going to have to live this way for the rest of their lives. And it's just not true. And so it's really offers hope. And I, for one, feel just grateful that I found a way to practice medicine that really helps people and gives them hope versus telling them there's nothing they can do but take, you know, strong medicine that has side effects that are just treating symptoms and not very well at that.
Yeah.
So it's really nice.
I remember being in the ER and you know, telling people once I got into functional medicine, I literally could have saved your life, you know, delivered your baby, you know, maybe not saved your life, but at the end of the day, like in functional medicine, it's the first time that I ever feel as a physician that I've actually been able to be a healer. Whereas, you know, in conventional medicine, I just felt, again, I was managing or it was a crisis situation, but I wasn't really healing people.
Right. So there's no place. So autoimmune diseases are a category of illnesses. There's about 100 now, as are estimated. And autoimmune diseases are a particularly amazing category of illnesses that are amenable to being to working on them with the functional medicine approach. Because what's an autoimmune disease, right? It's when the immune system, instead of attacking a foreigner, has decided it has become sick, really dysfunctional, and is instead attacking your own tissues. And that's not a normal state of health. As it sounds, it's obvious that it's not. And wherever your immune system decides to attack your own tissues is where you're sick. So if it attacks your thyroid, you develop a thyroid condition. If it attacks your joints, then you can develop rheumatoid arthritis. If it attacks your brain, you can develop MS. But at the foundation of that, at the root of all of that, is an immune system that's not functioning right. And as the word functional medicine, you know, when you look at that word, functional medicine, we're really good at looking for those triggers. Why isn't, and asking that question, why? Why isn't the immune system functioning right? And where are those triggers? You know, that saying that we love to talk about, that if you're sitting on a tack and if you have pain, the answer isn't to take painkillers, it's to find the tack and remove it. And when it comes to immune triggers, that's a perfect analogy, because there are tacks, there are the triggers, there are thorns in your system somewhere that are causing your immune system to behave in a sick way, you know, in a way that's promoting illness. And so that's what we're looking for. And in functional medicine, we have a checklist of the places we know to go to find those triggers. And when you go there, and so in my book, I'm very clear about where those triggers are. And so we look at food, we look at stress, we look at the gut, and we look at toxins and toxin overload and different kinds of toxins and how they trigger the immune system to become sick and attack yourself instead of just only attacking foreigners.
Right. And, you know, as we'll get into in your approach, for us, it actually can be very easy to find these triggers and very easy to get these triggers out. Now, certainly they're more complex autoimmune or people who are, you know, more severe than others, and it may take even more digging or more time. But in general, for a lot of people, finding these triggers and resolving these triggers is actually can be easy to find and quick to recover from.
Yes. And as I tell everyone, like you said, it's not magic for everybody. I think that there's a whole, probably half the people that come in experience that magic within the first few months, right? Once you fix the food and get them off gluten and clean up the gut and start doing some, you know, identifying the toxins that they might be, you know, exposed to and clearing those out. And the majority of everybody feels better right away. The issue of, there are some very complicated autoimmune diseases, of course, and if somebody's already very debilitated with MS, for example, you're not going to help get someone out of a wheelchair within a month, but the goals are probably different depending on how, where they are in the course of their disease. But everybody, even the MS patient in a wheelchair, will feel better, will have more energy, and the symptoms can start abating and at least progress, you know, halt the progression of the disease.
Right, right. Well, let's talk about your book, The Immune System Recovery Plan. You know, how did you come up with, you said there are kind of four pillars. How did you come up with those?
Well, I was doing a lot of research about autoimmune disease. Really, the way to go back for me and look at it was, well, what does the immune system need to develop in a healthy way? So when you go back and really study and understand the healthy development of the immune system, I learned, you know, what the immune system needs, what kind of environment is healthy for the immune system. And so I studied, and as you know, the gut is the center of the universe for functional medicine, and there's so much research and important information about the relationship between the gut health, and we're talking about the healthy flora, you know, in the gut, the good bacteria, the intestinal lining, and how important that though the gut is for the healthy development of the immune system. And what you find is, for example, we're saying that the gut trigger, or the gut as the first sort of topic, is that you can, there's a lot of research looking at what can go wrong in development that can cause the immune system to behave in a negative way. And so what in autoimmune diseases, the immune system, one of the ways that the immune system develops badly is it loses the tolerance, it's called, to yourself. It doesn't recognize self as self. And there's some really good research about how that can go awry in the gut, in the immune system in the gut. And so what I learned, so I developed my pillars by going back and looking at normal development of the immune system and seeing and reading about what could go wrong. And I realized, you know, if we fix the gut, then it should heal the immune system's development, and then the immune system will behave right again. And it turns out that that's in fact what happens. And so the gut is certainly, there's a lot of research on the gut. There's a lot of research about gluten, you know, and when you look at in the literature and studying about the association of gluten and autoimmune diseases, one pillar had to be food, right? It had to be, well, what are we eating, and food sensitivities, and how is that affecting the immune system? And so I went back and looked at triggers that I knew, and I took those triggers and I just put them into a stepwise program to fix those triggers. It turns out that so the food piece and gluten is really key, as well as, you know, the immune system needs a lot of antioxidants to work properly. The immune system is busy putting out fires all over your body, you know. It's called oxidative stress, we call it, and they're very subject to being stressed easily. So your immune cells, your army, really needs a lot of antioxidants and nutrients. And so I really just went back and thought about, you know, what do I need? What does your immune system need to be developed, to develop in a healthy way? And I put together a program that addressed every single one of those factors. And when I put that together and I worked that way with my patients, my practice for the past 13 years that I've been practicing functional medicine, and I've been doing this step by step, and this is what I did with myself and cured my Hashimoto's, it's tremendously successful for healing the immune system and reversing autoimmune disease. And so that's how I put that together in the book.
Awesome. And so you have dealing with food as for, I mean, food is medicine. So that's really looking at the gut. I mean, excuse me, looking at gluten and food sensitivities, as people have heard me speak about prior. I'm kind of curious. I noticed in your book, you definitely get people off of gluten, which is awesome. I noticed that there's some recipes using gluten-free oats. And I was just kind of curious, do you see that most all of your patients who have a gluten sensitivity can tolerate gluten-free oats, or do you still see people have problems with those?
Well, I would say sometimes people still have problems with them, which is why, as you do, when it comes to food sensitivities, I'm very clear about doing elimination diets and very mindfully reintroducing foods one at a time and paying very much attention to how you feel when you eat those foods. Mm-hmm. I think technically speaking, most people can tolerate gluten-free oats, but there are some times when people can't, and so then we take it back out.
Yeah.
But in general, I let people try and to introduce them and to see whether or not they're okay.
Yeah.
You know, gluten, when you look on the phylogenetic tree, oats and wheat are, they have similar grandparents, like two generations up, you know, is where they converge in terms of their relationship. You know, they're not, so as you pointed out, then there is the possibility that somebody could be sensitive to oats too, but I find most people can tolerate them.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I find most of my patients can't. I personally can't tolerate gluten-free oats.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, I mean, it's just, it goes to the individuality of, you know, of the person, and
right.
Which is what we're always talking about in functional medicine is, you know, that it is personalized medicine, and that's what I and I'm sure you do as well, you know, talk to all your patients about. But I just must have, you know, I must have a whole group of people who really can't handle them. So it's kind of interesting. That's what I wanted to ask because, you know.
Right. And, you know, in general, what I would say is that, you know, we're not big on grains here anyway, you know, in terms of a lot of our patients want to lose weight and reduce inflammation. And so I would say the majority of my patients aren't going back to eating a lot of oats, you know, every day. And a lot of people do protein shakes for breakfast. So it's not like they're putting in big quantity of oats into their diet every day. But I do, I agree with you. And this is always reminded, as I was telling a patient today, that, you know, when we all talk about the whole, should I do food allergy testing or should I do an elimination diet? Nothing replaces an elimination diet and careful reintroduction of the foods. No matter what kind of blood test you do, you know, your own experience and how you feel when you eat certain foods is really the only way to really know for sure whether a food is a problem or not. So
I completely agree with you. I always say your body knows better than any blood test. So really, you know, sorting that out for yourself and just using the food sensitivity as an adjunct, which it sounds like you're doing as well. That actually was my next question regarding grains in general. Do you find, you know, people can tolerate some grains, or you suggest that they get off all grains, or again, it's more of an individual?
Well, I think it's definitely individual. From an autoimmune perspective, I'm the most concerned with any grains that are triggering inflammation in the body. So those are certainly all the gluten grains. It's definitely corn. For people with arthritis, it's potato, you know, which isn't a grain, I know, but it's a, you know, starch. But we tend to limit grains, especially because a lot of people come in and they would like to lose weight, you know. And with certain body types, it just makes the most sense for people to try a very low grain diet. So we're not big on grains, but I'm also, there are some people that do just fine eating more gluten-free grains, you know, buckwheat and quinoa and millet and grains like that. And for them, it's fine if that's what they want to eat, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm not completely anti-grains. Again, it's individual, but we do find that, especially with our population that's here, you know, and our weight loss patients for sure, that limiting grains is key. Is that what you find as well?
I do. I mean, I don't see as many people for weight loss. I mean, again, it's probably somewhat like you, secondary, perhaps. But I typically do get my autoimmune, you know, if they've done an elimination diet and it hasn't worked for them, or they've gone gluten-free and it hasn't worked, or they're autoimmune, I'm really at least trying to start them, if they feel like they can do it, you know, grain and legume free from the beginning and kind of get well. And then from there, seeing if they can add the foods back, you know, those foods back in. But you also, as you know, you got to meet the patient where they are. You, as I'm sure you have as well, they're the people who've traveled from afar, and they are, you know, you just tell them what to do and they're going to follow it to a T. To other people, that this is really new for them and they're scared, and just giving up gluten is going to be hard enough. So, you know.
Right. And then there's different populations of people. So, for example, the people who we think have SIBO, you know, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and there's a lot of autoimmune people that have clear gut symptoms. So the gurgly, gassy, you know, people with a lot of gut symptoms will often do a FODMAPs, you know, diet, which is the removing the fermentable oligo and disaccharides, which is really no grains. You know, so sometimes we do, depending on the person, and especially, like I said, our gut people will often do a very restrictive grain diet. So yeah, so I think it depends, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's move on to step two of your program, which is the stress connection. And I feel like, you know, that's something that is definitely overlooked by most, and really, you know, I don't think has been covered in too many, you know, books about this, the stress and mind-body connection regarding illness. So, and I know that I think you're actually on the faculty of
Center for Mind-Body Medicine.
Yeah. So love to hear your thoughts on that part.
Yeah. So stress is dear to me. The whole idea, the whole stress and mind-body medicine piece. I've been working with the Center for Mind-Body Medicine for 15 years. It was really one of the great organizations. It is one of the great organizations. Dr. James Gordon is the founder. And really, for me, it opened my eyes to not only understanding and exploring how stress affects health, but also taught me tools, and then I teach other people tools in my practice. I could teach others, mind-body tools to relax, like teaching people how to breathe in the office in simple ways. So that's the framework that I came to mind-body medicine. What I would say is I wrote the book. What was fascinating for me as I did my research for the whole stress connection piece is that when we think about the stress system, and this is true for physicians as well as most patients too, we think of cortisol, you know, the adrenals, and the adrenals turn on, and what does cortisol do? And cortisol is that stress hormone. And what I learned about what stress does, and we all know that stress makes, that when you're really stressed, all of a sudden you get sick or you get a cold or you know you're more susceptible. It turns out that what stress does is it causes release of hormones. But in addition to the stress hormone cortisol, your nervous system is hardwired into all your adrenal, into your adrenal glands, which are the glands that make your stress hormones, and adrenaline. And your nervous system, your autonomic nervous system, which is the automatic nervous system that turns on and off when you're stressed, is hardwired into every lymph node and lymphoid organ where your immune system is developing. So there are receptors all over the place in all your whole immune system, in the army bases where the army's, you know, developing, as well as in all the soldiers, if we want to use that analogy. And there's hardwiring as well as hormones that bathe these immune cells and tell them how to behave. And when you're stressed, what the immune system does, what happens to the immune system, it doesn't get suppressed uniformly. It actually gets it knocked out of balance, so that one kind of division of the immune of the army starts working harder, and the other one turns off. And the one that turns off is the part of your immune system that fights viruses, you know, the cytotoxic T cells. So what was interesting to me when I wrote the book and did all the research was that I've always focused so much on cortisol, and we all do, you know, about the adrenals and cortisol, and we need to. But that there's also the importance of balancing your sympathetic, your whole autonomic nervous system, and which is the adrenaline piece, you know, the automatic nervous system part. And that's where the mind-body techniques really come in good. You know, meditation, guided imagery, finding time for relaxation every day, breathing, going for a walk to balance your autonomic nervous system. And so I really think, I don't know, I wouldn't say that stress is, I've discovered over the years that stress might not be the number one underlying cause of how someone develops an autoimmune disease. Usually those other triggers are present. You know, the gut's a mess, or you already have a big toxic burden, mercury, you know, is already in your body and wreaking havoc with your immune system. But a big stressful event can just start the whole process and kick your disease into high gear, because it just imbalances your whole immune system. I have a patient who ended up, her husband like disappeared for a week, and like he just disappeared, and she ended up getting evicted from her house. She had two little kids, and she was on the street for like a day. And like the next day, her skin started mottling, and she developed, her vitiligo blossomed like practically overnight. And it was definitely from an acute stressful event. Within a week, her skin was all mottled from her, you know, vitiligo is when you depigment, you know, and you get these clear spots. And it was 100% came on from stress. But she also had, her gut was a mess, and she also had toxins we had to work on, and she needed to remove some foods. So it's not like that was the only thing, but it's an absolutely important piece. And your immune system cannot recover unless you rebalance things. You know, unless you make sure your adrenals are okay and not pumping out too much cortisol, unless you make sure that your nervous system, your sympathetic and your parasympathetic, which I sometimes call sort of the gas and the brakes, you know, that you've got, you know, your foot on the right path, you know, on and off, you know, like in good balance, and that you're not driving your immune system into an imbalanced state. Cortisol, when it bathes your lymphoid organs, when your immune system cells are developing, actually can promote the loss of tolerance, which is when the immune cells don't learn to recognize yourself or not, which is one of the triggers for autoimmune disease. So it's really, really important, and most people are not aware of how important it is.
Yeah, I would say, you know, for me personally, mine came on after my mother passed away, and then I had started medical school soon after that. So between those two massive stressors. Right. But as you mentioned, I had just gotten out of the Peace Corps, and every Wednesday for 3 months was shot day in the Peace Corps, and I have homozygous MTHFR, so I was susceptible to mercury. I clearly had a gluten issue that I'd been eating, you know, for years. So it wasn't just that. It was sort of everything that led up to it, as well as, you know, my genetic predisposition towards this. So I completely agree with you. And even, you know, back then when I was diagnosed, which I, you know, would have to add it up, but probably at least 10 years ago, I remember my conventional doctor saying, oh, we do believe that there is a stress component to this, that a lot of times an autoimmune disease will develop after a stressful event. So I was kind of, eye-opening that even my conventional doctor back then acknowledged that there was a connection there between that, that they had seen frequently autoimmune diseases starting after a stressful event.
Yes, but the key is, we can all agree, okay, and it's just like we can all agree that stress, you got sick, you know, I got that upper respiratory infection after I had that, you know, boyfriend stress, you know, we all can acknowledge that stress is a trigger that way. But the next step then is to take that knowledge and say, okay, so if we know stress is a trigger, then we have to flip that and say, well, we want to help the immune system recover, right? Now I have this autoimmune disease. How am I going to turn it around and help my immune system develop properly? I got to go down to the roots, you know, and we talk about the roots and working from the roots, and so that the leaves on the tree will be healthy. We have to go back to the roots and say, now I need to help the immune system recover and develop in a healthy way. And in order to do that, you have to take that one of those tacks out of your system, which is the stress tack, right? And so learning tools to relax every day, keep your nervous system, your stress system in balance, to make sure your adrenals are healthy so that you're making cortisol when you need it and not when you don't, and to, you know, find time for relaxation every day will help take that tack, right, out of your body, that stress tack. And when you do that, you start helping the immune system recover. And you just that, and so that's really the premise of the book, is to move through these different foundations of the body one at a time and help it recover and help that system develop and function normally. And when you do that, the immune system recovers and people feel better and their antibodies start going away. And that's really the steps to healing the immune system.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes is the hardest for people. I mean, you know, maybe somebody can't quit their, you know, X number hour job, hours a week job, or they have 5 children or this, that, or the other. So also not only maybe necessarily removing the stressor, but how can you effectively handle that stressor? And so it's like what you're talking about, doing the deep breathing. And I know you recommend in your book, you know, adaptogenic herbs to help support your adrenal glands during those stresses. What are some other things that you recommend for people? Because I really think that this probably is for me, the hardest piece. And my guess is it is for a lot of people, because they perceive those stressors as things that they can't do something about. And so when you can't quit the job or there's certainly a whole host of things that you can do, right? You can get out of the bad marriage. Some people can quit the job, but just, you know, choose not to for various reasons. But what can you do in the face of maybe not being able to change your circumstances, but change your mindset around it? And then, you know, what are some, you know, I don't know if you could give, you know, maybe 4 tools or something that people can take away to do.
Yeah. Well, I completely agree with you. And I generally, the way I usually frame this is, you can't, you know, necessarily change the stress. We all have stress. We're all going to have stress every day. And so you have to learn tools to prevent that stress from coming into your body and making you sick. That's really what we're looking at. We're not looking at you changing your job, right? Because I agree. That's unrealistic. And so the idea is to prevent the stress from coming into your body. So we start working in how to help your body feel less stress. And so number one, get a good night's sleep. I always say, a good day or a stress-free day starts the night before. Those adrenals and your stress system, they heal at night when you're sleeping. And so I really work on sleep with people. Set a bedtime, you know, get you up to bed by 10:30, 10:30. If you're up after 11, it's too late. Make sure you get a minimum of 7 hours at night sleep. If you're having trouble falling asleep or staying asleep, then we have different herbs for that. I talk about that in my book and some suggestions. But, you know, sometimes I know as a working for myself, as a working mother, you know, by the time I get home at night and get everything settled, I don't want to go to sleep yet because I'm enjoying that alone time at night. And so you have to, for myself, I know I have to get over that and just stick to my bedtime, you know, and go to sleep. So sleep is the first thing. The second thing is you really can look at your day, and I call it preventive scheduling. I know very well when I've created a day for myself, that's going to kill me, right? And so if I put another meeting in or I squish another patient in or I schedule something before work and then something after work, then I'm going to come home at the end of that day and be really stressed. So, you know, you can do better. You know, I can do better. Everybody can do better with their scheduling of themselves. So you don't have to overschedule yourself. So choose to put somebody that called you instead of squishing them in on a given day, put them on another day. So I call that preventive scheduling, right? Don't overbook yourself. You know, make sure you're eating lunch every day at work, give yourself time, and find time for some sort of relaxation every day, whether or not it is, you know, we do a lot of CDs and guided meditations and, you know, have people download, or we have them here, you know, we give people guided, you know, CDs that they can upload onto their phones and listen to. People that take the train, I live in New York's metropolitan area, I have them listening to guided visualizations and guided meditations on the train back and forth to work. You know, it's just as simple as saying, don't work on the train, do something relaxing. So there's always ways you can find time in your schedule to breathe, you know, to take that deep breath, to not work, to turn it off. And if you do all these things, you'll start noticing that you feel less stressed. You know, and that your body is not all, you know, tense, and that you're not living in, you know, high cortisol land, as I say, you know, as I like to say. So there's a lot of things you can do, and it's really just about what we call self-care. And for some people, the first step is deciding and accepting and making commitment that they're going to take care of themselves and put this sort of framework, you know, put it ahead of something else. Like, this is important. I have to find time every day to breathe, you know, and to turn off my stress system. Otherwise, it'll make you sick.
Well, I'm just over here smiling because so much of that hit home. I'm going to be gone to India for 2 weeks at the end of the month, and, you know, just trying to sort out getting patients in and things like that. And so I normally don't see patients on Fridays, but, you know, between trying to write a book and redoing a website, I was like, okay, I could fit a patient in here, and my staff is looking at me like,
exactly.
No. No, and then you're going to be complaining about how stressed you are and how tired you are. And I'm like, okay, I am going to resist. I'm going to listen to you all. I'm not going to, you know, add the patient in because I have the extra hour or whatever. So I'm smiling because it, you know, it is, you know, a lot of us that got into this boat because we have these type A personalities. And I know that certainly played a big role in mine.
Yes.
And then just the importance of sleep. I mean, it's so true. If I go to bed at 10 versus 11, it's a massive difference. And I did a podcast with Dan Pardee, who's a sleep expert, and I highly recommend anybody, you know, listening to this, having trouble sleeping. It's a really great podcast, some super, super simple and either free or inexpensive things that you can do to get a good night's sleep, because I completely agree with you about that one. And I appreciate you bringing that up. Well, okay, so we have, you know, food is medicine, part one. Part two is the stress connection. And then part three is healing your gut. So we've kind of, and anybody that's listening to this knows, you know, my stance on the gut and the importance of the gut, and you've already brought it up about it's the foundation of, you know, functional medicine. It's really the foundation of your health. But anything else you want to say, you know, regarding the gut?
Well, what I would say is that leaky gut, there's a condition called leaky gut syndrome, and that's when the barrier function of the intestines is compromised. So normally you bring the outside world into your mouth every day, and the estimates are that if you open up all your intestines, the surface area is the size of a tennis court, right? So that's a lot of land. And so every day you bring in the outside world into your mouth, and all that lining in your intestines is supposed to be a barrier that is very discriminating in what comes in and what doesn't. And if that barrier breaks down, and we, the way we sort of joke or allude to it is that the glue that holds those cells together gets unglued, then food or partially digested food or toxins can just sort of leak into the body, and that's what can cause the immune system, which is right there in the intestinal lining, to become chronically activated, like another thorn in the body, another, you know, if you're sitting on tack, like we were saying, it's another one of those tacks. So I guess what I wanted to point out is that in my view and everything I've read and all the research, everyone with autoimmune disease has leaky gut until proven otherwise. So everybody in my practice gets a stool test. If you have an autoimmune disease, you go home with a stool test. Whether or not you have digestive symptoms of any kind, it doesn't matter. You still get a stool analysis, which what that does is it looks at your ability to digest your food. It looks at how, what your gut flora looks like, you know, your own gut flora, how healthy it is, as well as looking for overgrowth of bad bacteria, yeast, or parasites that can be sort of mucking up the garden. You know, it's the inner garden. We want it to be really beautiful with lovely flowers and healthy bacteria and not filled with weeds. And if you get overgrown with weeds, and there's all these reasons why that can happen, you know, like a lot of antibiotic use over time. This is another place that stress has an effect on triggering autoimmune disease, because chronic stress or severe traumatic stress can alter your gut flora, which then will affect your whole immune system in your gut, because the gut flora talk to the immune system. They help, they actually interact with your developing immune cells that lie right under the surface. So they're just so that important. So because of all those connections, and it's well documented in the literature of the connection between leaky gut syndrome and autoimmune disease, in my practice, everyone has it until proven otherwise. And so in my book, I really try to make that, I really go through in the literature and make the case for that. And so the way that we start working on healing the gut is in, you know, very clear in the book, but as you know, you know, functional medicine has a great, you know, 5R gut restoration program, which is for the most part what I'm helping people do, you know, in the book. So you have to remove all the bad stuff, the bad bacteria, the bad yeast, the bad parasites. You want to re-inoculate with the good bacteria and really help the good bacteria grow. You want to repair the intestinal lining. You want to replace digestive enzymes. You know, it's all this to help the digestive system function really well. And so, so that's what we do. And I use a lot of herbs to clean out the weeds, so to speak. I really love using herbs. And fixing the gut is definitely key and, you know, a central part of what we do. So I end up doing gut work on really everybody with autoimmune disease.
Yeah, and I imagine you do gut work on really everybody, right?
Well, that's true. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about autoimmune disease here, but,
yeah,
you know, inflammation, really everybody, I would say 90% of the people in my practice get a stool test, as I'm sure you do too.
Yeah.
And so, yes, and anybody with any inflammatory condition, any... really all chronic illness. A lot of inflammation comes from the gut. And so, and look, a lot of people come in with gut symptoms anyway, you know, a lot of irritable bowel, constipation, a lot of, you know, reflux, all the people on antacids. I mean, being on antacids and proton pump inhibitors is very bad for the functioning of your gut. So you know, if you're on those things, you need to get off, and it's a sign that something's not right. So, yes, so we do a lot of gut for everybody, but with autoimmune disease, I insist, you know, on the stool analysis, no matter what, you know, even if people are like, but my gut's fine, like, doesn't matter, you know,
Absolutely. I always, people will ask me when I'm at conferences and things, you know, that live other places, well, how can I tell if they really practice functional medicine? I'm looking for a doctor. I said, ask them if they could only run one test on you, what would it be? And if they don't answer you a stool test, they're not practicing functional medicine. I was like, honestly, that's how you can tell. Because
oh, that's so perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and you know, I totally appreciate, you know, I mean, I pretty much figure if you're sitting in my office, you have a leaky gut. And then certainly if you have autoimmune, I completely agree. I don't know if you use Cyrex zonulin test. That's actually looking at antibodies, or if you know of Dunwoody Labs, they actually do a zonulin level to ask, have you been using them at all?
I have not. And actually, this is where I live in New York.
Yeah. And it's
I have this whole issue with, the good news is that I'm on staff at Greenwich Hospital, a Connecticut hospital, and I have a Connecticut license too. So I can actually do some of the out of New York testing through the other office, you know, in Connecticut. It's tricky. And so there's some things I can't do, but I just heard about the test and I just got the Cyrex list. So I'm going to see whether or not I can do that test in New York. So how are you using that? Like, what are you doing? How are you using that test?
Well, originally, Cyrex looks for antibodies towards zonulin, but Dunwoody Labs, which I recently got connected with through David Hasse, Dr. David Hasse, it actually tests for zonulin levels. And so I have been using that a lot more. And I have found, I actually did this both test on two people, and both of them had autoimmune, but neither of them either had antibodies or zonulin. So I just kind of, it was an interesting, I mean, it's, you know, being an academic as you are and, you know, being in medicine, we use that if you have autoimmune, you by definition have leaky gut. And it was just kind of fascinating to me that I had these people not actually have high zonulin or antibodies. So I suppose.
So thinking that zonulin is the glue, right?
Yes.
Between cells.
Mm-hmm.
Just so your listeners, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
I went up into technical. So zonulin is the glue between the cells. So would the assumption then be that you wouldn't have that autoimmune people with leaky gut should have low zonulin levels?
No, they should have high zonulin levels because it's leaking into the blood. So they have high zonulin levels.
Yeah. So the zonulin's leaking into the blood.
Mm-hmm. So you as zonulin rises, I guess one could say the more leaky your gut is.
I see.
You can actually track healing the gut through tracking zonulin levels.
Okay.
Yeah, it was kind of a fascinating thing to me because I think all of this is relatively, I mean, these tests are very new. So it's all very new research regarding zonulin and then the testing. So it's
all right, so you tried it with two people who had autoimmune, so you would assume we believe that test is like a valid sort of measure that those people do not have leaky gut? Whose levels were so low?
Right. But I myself had a high zonulin and I have autoimmune. So, I mean, I definitely see zonulin. I definitely am seeing it with people who have autoimmunity.
Okay.
For sure. For sure. I was more just giving the interesting fact that we all say, and I even asked Dr. Fusano, who is the person who actually found zonulin in the gut. As you know, he was at our most recent functional medicine conference, and I was asking him, does everyone, you know, who has autoimmune, would they have, you know, therefore, does everyone with autoimmune by definition have leaky gut? And everyone's answer is yes. So I found it fascinating, you know, but who knows, the tests are new. So is there some inaccuracy in the test or is it not really proven that you definitely have to have a full leaky gut in order to have autoimmunity? I mean, this is all new science. So,
I think I would agree that probably not everybody has leaky gut, and certainly people have different degrees of it. And only judging by food allergy testing, you know, when somebody has a really bad leaky gut, they come up positive to everything.
Right.
So I had some autoimmune patients that, and even looking at intestinal permeability testing, I mean, sometimes their gut isn't too bad.
Yeah.
But I still think that from my perspective, and I know yours too, we presume they have leaky gut because it's such an association between that and autoimmune disease until proven otherwise.
Absolutely.
You know? So they get the stool analysis and we just make sure, you know, and we do the whole thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, step four is supporting your liver and all about, you know, toxins and detox. So you want to tell us about that?
Absolutely. And so toxins are really, really important aspect of what we do in functional medicine in general, because we're aware of the amount of toxins that we're all exposed to every day. I think the CDC, you know, looked at the blood of the average American and there were 262, you know, chemicals floating around in the blood that shouldn't be there. So we know that we have a big toxic burden, most of us. And some of us don't do a great job excreting toxins. You were talking about yourself before and some of your genetic handicaps. You know, some people are genetically handicapped and don't excrete, especially metals, for example, but all toxins. And so when we look at the immune system is very sensitive to toxins. And so there's two different ways the toxins can cause the immune system to become sick. One is to develop an autoimmune disease. One is that the toxins actually cause stress on the immune cells themselves and damage them. And that can happen with mercury for sure and other heavy metals. But the immune system, the immune cells, they can get damaged and not work right when they're faced with ongoing stress, which is what they're dealing with as they're getting bombarded with these toxins. The immune system responds to them. And so they can get sick and lose their tolerance, as we say, you know, from just interaction with the toxins. The other big thing that toxins can do is they can go into your tissues and damage your cells. And so that's one of the things that does happen with mercury, for example, in the thyroid gland. And I think that happens with actually a lot of toxins and the thyroid gland, especially organochlorides, which are, you know, pesticide residues that have chlorine in them. And there's that whole, a whole understanding about the thyroid gland, how it takes up different compounds that might have halide residues, you know, like iodine in the periodic table is iodine, and then chloride, fluoride, and bromide are all sort of the same, you know, electron in the outer chain. And so the idea is that they can get taken up into the thyroid gland. And so toxins, so the thyroid gland becomes this organ that toxins can end up in, right? And mercury can go into the thyroid too. And so the idea is that those toxins damage the tissue itself, and then your immune system sees that tissue as foreign and attacks it. And so that's one of the other theories about how toxins work to create autoimmune disease. So either by directly damaging and influencing the immune system, or by damaging your tissue, and then the immune system attacks your tissue because it looks foreign. And so at the end of the day, you know, you can't always know. So what do we do about this, right? And so there's a lot in the literature associating, you know, toxins with Hashimoto's and toxins with lupus and rheumatoid arthritis and MS. And, you know, there's a lot of a good body of literature looking at all the different kind of environmental exposures. And so we know that this is a potential trigger. And so I remember once being asked by, actually, it was my women's radiologist. I was going to get my mammogram and I was telling her what I do. And she says, well, you know, how can you do detox if you can't identify what the toxin is? Like, don't you need to know? And I said, well, you know, it would be really helpful to know. And we do have some tests that we can do, which we could talk about. But at the end of the day, this is why I call step four supporting your liver. Because at the end of the day, you know, we have a natural detox organ in our body. It's called our liver, right? The liver is in charge of mobilizing and detoxifying and transforming our toxins and getting them out of the body, excreting it in the bile, and you poop it out. And so the liver is supposed to do that. But over many years, and as we get older, many, many, many years of environmental sort of bombardment and toxic load, the liver can get pooped and just not do its job the way it's supposed to. And so the liver needs a tune-up. And so my idea, and this is a functional medicine principle, so I didn't make it up, but I just applied it to the step, you know, to autoimmune disease. The idea is that if we give the liver all that it needs, it's sort of like having a stagnant pond of just a pool of water just sitting there stagnant. And if you take a filter engine and stick it in the middle of the pond and go, and it starts revving up and starts filtering all that stagnant water, it starts cleaning it up as it comes through the filter. If we turn that liver on and give it all the nutrients it needs, you'll start, you will start mobilizing all the toxins in your body and cleaning them out and excreting them. And your toxin load goes down and it helps unload those toxins from your body so that the tissues and the immune system can recover. And so the approach then for liver support or detox from a functional medicine perspective is about turning on all those livers, those steps in the liver detox pathways in a very intentional way with very targeted supplements, and you remove all toxins. And so that you don't necessarily need to know what the toxin is if you can't figure it out, because we can't always. We don't, you know, there are some tests for heavy metals that you and I do all the time, and which is mercury, lead, arsenic, cadmium. and aluminum. And then there are some tests for pesticide residues that you can do, but unfortunately, sometimes these accumulations are old, and they're not just in the blood, or they're hard to identify. And so the strategy really is just mobilizing and moving, helping your liver just do a better job. And I find, and I have found, and I know you have too, that when we help people and detox them this way, they really get better. Do I do this to everybody? It depends. This is where history is really important. I do very, very, very thorough history. And in my book, I have a really good questionnaire. There are two kinds of questionnaires there. There's the toxic load. Does it, you know, going through your whole history and possible exposures, where have you been exposed? And then there's symptoms related to toxicity where you can decide and see whether or not you're likely to have too many toxins in your body based upon your symptoms. And when I interview people in my office and I spend a lot of time with them, you know, as I know you do too, I can gather that. I understand by the end of interviewing them and doing the whole history, if the toxins really are where the money is, you know, with this person, or if the gut's where the money, like, where do we start first? You know, and so go where, you know, where the history tells me to go and where the symptoms tell me to go. But the evaluation of environmental exposure and environment-related symptoms is always key and critical for looking at and treating autoimmune disease.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I mean, it's sort of, as I mentioned before with the gut, you know, if you're in my office, I kind of assume you have a leaky gut, and I assume you probably have some problems with detox as well. So we're going to supporting and helping the liver from, you know, from the beginning, as you are as well.
Right.
Well, this has been, you know, completely awesome. I love your book, The Immune System Recovery Plan, and your four you know, steps to healing using food as medicine and understanding the stress connection, healing your gut and supporting your liver. Sounds like it's, you know, four relatively simplistic, easy things that people can follow to help get some help. And if they're not getting, you know, help from the book, or I'm sure they'll be getting help from the book, but what additional resources do you have for people, and kind of how can they get in touch with you?
Yes. So one of the things that we did, that I did, was develop an online companion to the book to help support people as they're trying to work their way through the steps. It's at immuneprogram.com. And I have it's called Do It With Us. It's the four-step program, and we launched different modules. Right now we're running the Do It With Us gut cleanse program, where you can actually sign up to get daily emails, and there's a blog where you can ask questions, and we have an Ask Us Anything button where you could submit questions as you're going through the book. So I have a dedicated health coach who is in charge of supervising everybody's questions online. And so my idea was, because I can't see everybody, just like you can't see everybody, and there are people all over the world and all over the country, to help people make their way through the book and support them in their journey of doing each of these steps, at immuneprogram.com, I have just an opportunity to get that support and for us to help you with the program. So that's really the best way to get the answers to your questions or to get the support you need, you know, as you're doing any of those steps in the book.
Great. And then what is your clinic website? And I assume you have a Facebook page as well.
Yeah. So Blum Center for Health is the health center. So it's what we call Blum Center for Health. We have a Facebook page. We're on LinkedIn. You know, we're everywhere. We have don't ask me my Twitter handle because I don't know that. Try it. That somebody else does. It helps me with that. So it's all programmed into my phone. But we have, so we're all on social media. BlumCenterForHealth.com is the main website, and immuneprogram.com is within that website, so you can find us. Both can be found by either URLs, and we have about all of our services and everything we do. People travel from all over to come see me or to see my nurse practitioner who here works with me. Your listeners don't need to come. They'll all come see you in Texas, but anybody who's near me on the East Coast can certainly you know, come look me up over here. And just trying to get the word out, you know, and trying to be here to help people who are struggling with their chronic illness, you know.
Well, we really appreciate it. I'll have links to all those on the blog, and your Twitter handle is Blum Center, just so you know.
Thank you.
Well, Susan, thank you so much for all that you do, and for, you know, getting the word out, and for, you know, being such an amazing help for so many people.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me today. It was fun to talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye.
To stay in touch with Dr. Myers, you can sign up for her newsletter on her website at dramyers.com or connect with her on Facebook or Twitter at Amy Myers, MD.